Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So this week on the show, Tim Swartz is our special or super special guest co-host. He said special wasn't enough. He wanted to be super califragilistic. No, he doesn't want to do that because I don't even want to say that word.
I can say it over to
you. Please, but don't. Our guest is John LeMay, who's written a number of books covering history of the Southwest, cryptozoology, UFOs, and cinema history. And I may want to ask him about Dave Ureston still, because it had so much of an influence on the UFO field. But the most interesting thing about John LeMay is that he was born. You were born there, or did you live there?
No, I was born in Roswell, New Mexico. I've never left.
You are now, as we speak, in Roswell, New Mexico.
I am.
And in your basement is the crashed spaceship, right?
No, I just have a tiny piece of the memory metal I found on the debris field, and that's it. Not really. I wish.
Well, you know, being a native, obviously the advantage in Roswell to being a tourist attraction is tremendous. But what do you think really happened?
So I do think it was an actual UFO crash. Whether or not they were aliens, I mean, that's debatable. I mean, that's kind of where I'll get into that John Keel territory. I'll argue, were they aliens? Were they demons somehow? That sort of thing. But something definitely crashed in the desert. And why I believe that is because I met some of the witnesses who saw the debris. And they were good, respectable people. I don't think they were lying. And yes, they did publish books on it, made a little money, but it was a very honorable generation overall. So if they all tell the same story and say it happened, that's what makes me a believer.
Well, of course, we always try to wonder what would have happened. Other theories are that it was some kind of government experimentation.
Yes, and I might recommend a friend of mine to you named Guy Malone, who has a theory that the whole thing was a smokescreen for something else, that he could really talk in depth about that. But just because of the witnesses, though, I do tend to think it was what they said they saw with the little men with the big black eyes and the strange debris that when you would crumple it up into a ball, it would straighten itself back out again.
Well, we're not going to go into a debate about Roswell. It's certainly, I tend to think a lot of what we've heard about Roswell is unfortunately not correct and has not sustained itself over the years. Part of it being that the memories of what happened didn't emerge because no one asked them about it until over 30 years after the original event, and pop culture had made such a difference. But let's get on to other stuff here, because that could be more and more interesting, especially since you've followed some of the writings of John Keel. I'm going to ask you a question. Yeah, out of left field here, John, since you're following the field. Last week we had Colm Kelleher. He's the microbiologist who worked with Robert Bigelow, and he had been at Skinwalker Ranch and everything. And he talked about something called a hitchhiker effect. People seeing UFOs, and that attracts other phenomena, and they suffer physical symptoms as a result. Had you heard of anything like this?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that goes back to Keel. He took note of the fact that people who see Bigfoot, people who see ghosts, people who see UFOs, sometimes they seem to attract strange things for some reason. Because what are the odds that they would experience all three? And again, when Keel investigated Mothman in the late 1960s, he did encounter poltergeists, UFOs, men in black, cryptids, and that's why he came to the belief that they were all somehow related. So, yeah, no, I hadn't heard it called the hitchhiker theory exactly, but it does make sense to me.
Have you ever seen anything strange and or unusual?
Yes, and it really wasn't that big of a deal to me. This sounds funny. I was just sitting with my aunt and uncle. They have a hot tub kind of out in the country. We're just sitting there one night, and we did see what I would call a UFO in the sense that I couldn't tell what the body of the craft was. It was just a bright light that we assumed was just a regular airplane, but all of a sudden it just ascended thousands of feet into space until it totally disappeared, and it did it. You know, again, it was kind of flying like you'd expect an airplane to fly, but then all of a sudden it just went straight up and totally disappeared, and it couldn't have been any craft that normal people, normal citizens know of. So it had to be either an experimental craft or something, you know, beyond this world. So it didn't actually make that big of an impact on me, to be honest with you. It didn't freak me out, but it might have freaked me out more. I could have actually seen the details and seen what the craft looked like. So yeah, I've just had a very, very routine sighting, and that is it.
Now, how did you get interested in these subjects? Because you live in Roswell? Was that the key factor or what?
You know, that's the irony of it. As a kid, I was probably less interested in aliens than anything because of that. But what I did like, I love Bigfoot, I love the Loch Ness Monster, or in other words, cryptozoology. You talk about how I like sci-fi movies. I love dinosaurs. So for me as a kid to find books about how supposedly maybe dinosaurs had survived into the modern era, I think I read a lot of books by Daniel Cohen when I was a kid because he wrote for that age group. So that's what really got me interested, was more so cryptozoology. And then UFOs I got in basically because I had to, because I live here. You know, I mean, it's easily accessible. You know, as I said, I knew some of the witnesses and things like that.
What choice did you have? Do you have a day job that we could point to?
Well, not anymore. I mean, it's pretty mundane. My family used to run a mobile home park. I worked there. I would write books on the side. But at this point in my life, I'm up to 30 books, and at 30 books, I can just siphon the royalties off of those and get by kind of comfortably. I mean, Roswell is the cost of living in Roswell is very low compared to other cities, so maybe, you know, I couldn't do this in New York or some big town like that, but here in Roswell, 30 books is enough to get by on.
Well, that's a good way if you can get away with it. How big a city is Roswell?
It's about 50,000 people. The official census will always place it maybe at 48,000 or something, but I'm sure there's several thousand people that are in the city that haven't been counted. It's actually about 50.
Well, especially the ones with big heads and small bodies.
Yeah, I set you up for that one pretty easily, I see.
Yes, you do. Good setup. I will congratulate you for that great, really, really good setup. Now, talking about all this stuff, you're interested in cinema history. And I know that you were co-author of a book about the real cowboys and aliens. Did that come out around the time the film came out?
Yes, and that's exactly why it did come out, is with all that hype leading up to it. My co-author and I, Noe Torres, who is an actual ufologist, or, you know, ufologist from Texas.
Yes.
We just decided... you know, I mean, everybody's all excited for this movie, but the general public doesn't realize that there were a sizable amount of UFO cases back in the Old West. So we kind of cheated, though, on the book because we wanted to beat the movie. So we decided instead of doing an adult-level book, we just did a kid's book kind of written at the middle age level. So, but that was just the first one. He and I have since gone on to adapt it to an adult reading level. And, you know, back in 2011, when we wrote it, they didn't have this massive newspaper archive online, just right at your fingertips. Now that we have that, Noe and I have done about six additional books on UFOs in the Old West and in the very early 20th century, and we do write those on an actual adult level.
I think a lot of people are surprised to hear that there was UFO activity prior to 1947.
Yeah, and it's just back then they would call them airships because they just hadn't coined the term unidentified flying object yet. But so if you want to do some searching on your own, you would just get on newspaper.com and type in keyword airship, and you will find thousands of results.
We've got John LeMay. with special guest co-host Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
You've heard that supply lines are down or moving slow. And that most everything costs more these days. But good news. High-quality Sunny Bay products are in stock and ready to ship now because they're made in the USA. Like our extra-long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs, are microwavable, and come in a variety of colors and patterns. What a great gift! An extra-long neck heating pad from Sunny Bay. Also available in lavender scented. Buy now in time for the holidays and avoid any shipping delays. Available on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. They're great for men or women, are reusable and easy to clean. So, this year, give the gift of pain relief. An extra long neck wrap from Sunny Bay. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Order now when our stock is high and shipping is fast. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hey folks, Tom D for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, ghosts, zombies, UFOs, crop circles, and more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people who seek a little more than the other dating services offer. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and you want to connect with others, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. So many people want to share their experiences with the paranormal, the afterlife, the unusual, and this is the place to meet and share common interests with those of like minds. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Use the code word GEORGE and start meeting others. Get going now and connect with someone you like.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
John, Noe has been on the Paracast before, at least once, that I could see back in 2012. So we enjoyed having him on. And you said you did how many books with him? Five?
I can't even keep track. It's five, six. I'm not sure yet. Maybe even seven. That's how bad it is. Noe and I are just so busy cranking these things out. it's hard to keep track of because we, like you said, some we did for kids, some we did for adults, and sometimes I don't even count the kids' books because they just came together so easy.
Now, the book Cowboys and Aliens, I'm thinking of the movie. I saw the movie. I wasn't nuts about it. I had some good ideas, and I had a feeling that they had done their research in terms of the UFO field before writing the script. But it really didn't do well, and I think part of it is because it's something that the public wasn't really able to glom onto. What do you think?
Yeah, I think people liked the idea of that movie more so than they liked the movie itself. I don't ever want to talk down about that movie. I did enjoy it. And my funny story about that movie is I did a lot of interviews with different news outlets because of it. I think the Huffington Post contacted Noe and I first, and they had asked us, well, what do you think about how they portrayed aliens? And Noe and I would just answer the honest truth, which is that movie's based on a comic book series. That, you know, they weren't really looking for any type of historical accuracy. And the reporter would always take that answer and make the headline out of it, which was, UFO researchers say Cowboys and Aliens movie totally false, which made us look like morons, like we were upset about it, and we weren't, you know. And then same thing, I think somebody from the Albuquerque Journal called me, and I was joking with the reporter. I was like, yeah, they totally misquoted me. It made it look like I was upset about this movie. And then once they were done, they did the same thing to me. So it made me learn to be really careful what I say to reporters.
If there's an axe to grind, certainly. But we should mention, by the way, Cowboys and Aliens from 2011 starred Daniel Craig, not Bond from Mr. Bond, but Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford, believe it or not, and Olivia Wilde. Now, I looked up the movie's box office. It never made back the original budget. The original budget was $163 million. It made back $174 million worldwide. And the problem with that sounds good, right? It's not good because of one reason. A movie has to make at least twice the production cost to even begin to break even. And if it's one of these superhero movies, like a Justice League, they've got to add another $50 or $100 million for the promotion. So it's kind of sad. They lost a lot of money on that movie.
The production cost of that movie was a lot higher than I thought it was. That's a pretty expensive movie to make.
Well, you know, you're paying Harrison Ford. You're paying Daniel Craig. Olivia Wilde hadn't been a big star. She's mostly known now for doing movies and directing, but tend to be smaller movies. I remember her because she was one of the members of the ensemble of House, the TV series, if you remember that. But that's part of it right there. You're paying two A-list actors, and they're getting all sorts of money up front and back end and foreground and everything.
Well, I remember when the movie was in production, there was a lot of press about it. And I think that a lot of people were eagerly awaiting for it to come out. But obviously, pre-production press went far and beyond the actual movie.
Well, let's go past that. I mentioned that because obviously it was a reason for Noe and for John to write a book. But when I think of sci-fi movies, I think of The Day the Earth Stood Still. Not the one with Keanu Reeves, with the original, with Michael Rennie. Because that was the forebear of many of the UFO contact claims from the early 50s. Have you done much research, John, into that movie?
So the only way in which I've done research into that movie, I do another publication on the side called the Lost Films Fanzine, where I dig up unproduced movie scripts. So in terms of what you were really asking, no. Not in terms of, like, the real-life contactee, but I did dig up, and it's not hard to do, by the way. It's not like I found it and only I found it. Somebody put it online, but Ray Bradbury wrote a sequel called The Day the Earth Stood Still 2, I think it was, and I did read that and kind of review it for my little Lost Films magazine. So that's the only research I've ever done on The Day the Earth Stood Still, but I love the original. I did get to see that on the big screen, actually, because Roswell, during their 50th anniversary UFO festival in 1997, they showed that theatrically here. So I actually got to see it in the theater. You know, I was born in 1985, so usually movies from, let's say, 1955 on up are kind of okay, but I tend to prefer movies from the 70s on up, because movies from the 50s kind of can sometimes be a little bit too slow for me, but The Day the Earth Stood Still, I love. I think it's a fantastic film. It keeps me completely entertained and absorbed in the story, so I do think very highly of that film.
And, of course, the tall, handsome man in the silvery uniform became a staple amongst UFO contactees, I think particularly of George Adamski, but later Howard Menger. And Howard Menger had prepared some paintings of the UFOs he saw, and those paintings look surprisingly like the spacecraft in the scenes it was leaving Earth towards the end of Day the Earth Stood Still. The other thing, of course, we should know as far as trivia is the director, Robert Wise, was also director of Star Trek, the motion picture, and The Sound of Music, by the way, and was someone who actually believed in UFOs.
You were talking about Ray Bradbury.
I'm talking about Robert Wise, the director.
Well, yeah, but which I happen to have met Robert Wise several times and had dinner with him once. But John was mentioning Ray Bradbury, who had wrote the, a novelization sequel to The Day the Earth Stood Still. And that Bradbury was not a UFO believer. In fact, he insisted that the phenomena wasn't real, because if it was, somebody would have told him.
Say what?
Ray Bradbury said one time when he was being interviewed whether or not he believed in UFOs, and, you know, he said, no, he did not. And they asked, well, why? And he goes, well, if UFOs were real, somebody would have told me about it. That's he thought that, I guess, that and don't get me wrong, I love Ray Bradbury's writing, but I guess he thought he was important enough that somebody would have clued him in on the big secret if UFOs were real or not.
Oh, boy. Well, we don't want to get into the egos involved there. John LeMay is joining us, author of over 30 books. More coming. He wants to be the next Nick Redfern, but he's only, 36 years old. He's one year older than my son, Grayson. Our guest co-host is Tim Swartz. I'm Gene Steinberg. I'm old as the hills. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The accused Michigan mass shooter's mother cries at her Saturday arraignment on four counts of involuntary manslaughter. That is, James and Jennifer Crumbly were arraigned on those involuntary manslaughter charges. Their 15-year-old son allegedly used a gun that the parents bought him to shoot four people dead and wound seven others at his high school north of Detroit a few days ago. President Biden and Russia's Vladimir Putin plan a video call on Tuesday. It's coming at a time as tensions have grown over the massive Russian troop buildup along its border with Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken saying this week the U.S. has evidence Russia is planning to conduct a large-scale attack on that state, but Russia has been denying it. And this is USA Radio News. Former CNN anchor Chris Cuomo is talking about his termination from the network. On his Twitter, he said on Saturday evening that it isn't how he wanted his time at CNN to end, and he thanked his colleagues, calling them a group of very special people. CNN confirming on Saturday they had fired Cuomo after more information came to light about just how much Cuomo had helped his brother amidst sexual harassment allegations that then-Governor Andrew Cuomo faced. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger is reportedly telling some inside that organization that this is his final season. Down a level, as sports anchors would say, Alabama is the champion of the Southeastern Conference after defeating the top-ranked Georgia Bulldogs 41-24, the win securing Alabama's seventh SEC title in the past 10 seasons. Find us online at usaradio.com.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Enough of the hills. Enough of the hills. Now, there was one other sci-fi film that had a UFO influence, but John, this one, I don't know if you know. What UFO book influenced Earth versus the Flying Saucers?
I can't remember the title, but was it authored by, like, Donald Kehoe or somebody like that?
Yes, Flying Saucers from Outer Space. Okay. It said suggested by. And there was a bit of a story, which I've mentioned before, so I'll keep it brief, where Hollywood acquired the rights to Kehoe's book. I think he was led to believe or made himself believe it was going to be a documentary. And, of course, as people who have dealt with Hollywood know, unless you have some kind of production credit or rights, they can take your property and do anything they want with it. Almost. Okay? So what they did here is they have an opening sequence of, 30 seconds of Earth versus the Flying Saucers, where they talk about real UFO sightings. And then it's a standard sci-fi aliens on the loose film. I mean, very well done. For a B-movie, it had special effects from Ray Harryhausen. In some ways, the Flying Saucer had similar design to the one in Day the Earth Stood Still, but I think was more advanced. Kehoe was kind of mortified over what they did. Not that it was a bad film. I don't know if he even likes sci-fi, although he wrote adventure stories. But this film, as I said, it's one of the better B-movies, but it was obviously not a factual movie. Of course, Close Encounters of the Third Kind was also based on UFO literature, especially from Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And the story about that I'll give you is very simple, that they never told Dr. Hynek they were making that film. When he found out, he contacted them, and they gave him that cameo towards the end of the film where you see him stroking his beard, and they paid him, $3,500 for a film that grossed, what, over $1 billion? That's Hollywood for you.
I'm surprised they paid him that much.
Yeah, well, he was Dr. Hynek.
Well, he didn't even have any lines, so I'm surprised they just didn't pay him scale and give him a lunch, and that was it.
Well, the other thing, of course, is the French UFO researcher who speaks constant French, a famous movie director. That character supposedly is based on Jacques Vallée. But anyone who knows Jacques Vallée would know there was no possible resemblance in the way the character was portrayed.
Just but appearances in, only.
Yeah. In terms of UFO-oriented films, John, of the films that you've looked into, do you have a favorite?
Well, you really, I hate to sound so stereotypical, but I mean, the two we've talked about are really probably are my favorites, which is Close Encounters, which is pretty accurate to the 1970s type UFO encounters, and then Day the Earth Stood Still is very intelligent. So I definitely prefer that to, like, Earth versus the Flying Saucers and movies like that.
Well, I was going to say real quick here, Gene, that you look, though, at pop culture and movies when it comes to the to UFOs, and you know, just take for example Japanese films. So many Japanese films, the aliens arrive, travel around in the stereotypical flying saucer.
Oh, Tim, if I may, you jogged my memory to a UFO movie that I love.
Go for it.
Nobody knows about. Nobody listening to this show has probably heard of it because it's from Japan. Never got dubbed into English, got an English release of any kind. So it's from the Godzilla studio, you know, Toho. It's called Blue Christmas, just like the Elvis Presley song, Blue Christmas. And it's about people that have seen UFOs in the skies, and after they see them, their blood turns blue. And it's kind of like a political thriller, like 3 Days of the Condor mixed with Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Really good, really depressing movie about how the Japanese government then decides they need to exterminate all the people whose blood has turned blue. Really cool movie if you can find it. Made 1978, I think shortly after Close Encounters.
Yeah, the films they made weren't always kind to the government, or as a matter of fact, for example, Godzilla. Godzilla is the ultimate folly of nuclear testing. We create this hellish creature. Hello?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I think on radio shows, I'm used to only speaking when I'm being spoken to, and I always wait to get asked a question, you know what I mean? Because I hate it when I accidentally jump in and interrupt the host.
If there's a time to jump in if as needed, we're not going to be that structured. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, if you were setting me up to talk about my Godzilla books, thank you, because that's actually more than UFOs, more than the cryptozoology. I think the genre I'm best known for is the nonfiction Godzilla film histories I do, and I did one called The Lost Films, which was about the Godzilla movies that they wrote but never actually shot. So, yeah, I love Godzilla movies, and that is, ironically enough, probably what I'm best known for.
Now, I remember when they brought the original Godzilla to this country, if I remember the right movie, they added footage with Raymond Burr playing an American reporter in Japan to give it a more domestic feel, make it warm and fuzzy for the American audience.
That's right, because back then they weren't really in the habit of just taking, especially a Japanese language film, and just dubbing it into English and kind of letting it sink or swim. They felt like it absolutely could not succeed without an American, or at least a Caucasian, in the lead role. And it definitely, I think it was the right move. I think it helped the movie be more accessible to English-speaking audiences. But in the future, though, Godzilla, typically, they wouldn't do that. They would just dub them into English, and that was that.
Of course, there's another film that had some kind of a famous effect, The Mysterians, because this is a 1950s sci-fi film, one of the better ones, and then the name of The Mysterians was acquired or used by a rock band in the 1960s, and thus you had Question Mark and The Mysterians. And that's where he got it from. And, of course, their famous song is 96 Tears. I don't know if – I'm sure Tim knows what the song was or is. John, that's certainly way, way before your time.
Yeah, I've never heard – I knew that there was a rock band that took that name, but I've never heard any of their music that I'm aware of.
Well, I think after 96 Tears, there isn't much except that question mark. Rudy Martinez was his real name. He officially changed it to question mark. He is still performing, but if you catch his early shows, he's very thin and athletically built, very thin. And the way he dances and prances, you could look into a famous rock star who watched this guy and imitated him, and that's Mick Jagger. But you take a look at early recordings of Question Mark and the Mysterians and Question Mark doing his thing, then look at Mick Jagger and tell me if you don't see a resemblance.
You know, you were talking about Raymond Burr being cut into the original Japanese Godzilla. I have to admit, the studio that was responsible for shooting Raymond Burr's scenes and then editing them into the original movie, they did a fairly good job. I mean, you know, when I saw the movie originally as a kid on television, I had no idea. I mean, it was a fairly seamless job of editing.
You know, we got John LeMay here. We're talking about pop culture, genre films, UFOs, cryptozoology, and so much more to talk about because he's got all those 30 books that we can mention. Our special guest co-host is Tim Swartz. And by the way, John will hang out for our uncensored After the Paracast podcast. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com, and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Investors, listen up. There's been incredible demand in the market for companies focused on strategic mineral exploration. And right now, mineral discovery groups are piling into British Columbia's prolific Golden Triangle due to the massive discovery potential. China's economy is slowing down. Consumer goods remain in short supply. Pandemic-induced disruptions continue to affect global supply chains. And now the markets are bracing for interest rate hikes. All of this reads like a recipe for paying attention to companies focused on precious metals and in-demand minerals. Find out about the hottest companies leading the charge to revolutionize the multi-billion dollar mineral exploration market for free when you text the word HOT to 71441 for your free subscription to DearWallStreet.com. Text the word HOT to 71441 now to get information on these hot companies that we've identified. Get free intelligence on this hot market delivered directly to your mobile device from DearWallStreet.com when you text the word HOT to 71441. Text and data rates may apply. Text HOT to 71441.
This is Big the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
I think Sesame Street is taking over the Paracast there. At least Tim Schwartz, you sound like a Sesame Street character.
Could be. I upset my wife, who is a big Sesame Street fan, by the way, by imitating various Sesame Street characters, and you know that's a cardinal sin for her. So of course I do it all the time.
And the reason his face is red on both sides is because his wife slaps him when he does it.
we won't go into our domestic now, situation here.
One of the tropes in sci-fi films is the presence of dinosaurs. And I'm looking at your credits here, John LeMay, and you focused with your Cowboys and Saurian series on remnant dinosaurs and cryptids reported in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Tell me more.
Yeah, so that was an offshoot of the Cowboys and Aliens book, because it had done pretty well back in 2011, and I was just itching to do something similar. And, you know, there's this famous story I might talk a little bit more on later about the Tombstone Pterodactyl of 1890, where these two cowboys allegedly shot a pterodactyl outside of Tombstone, Arizona. So I started thinking, you know, I'm sure you could do a whole book just like we did with the Cowboys and Aliens, but with cowboys allegedly encountering remnant dinosaurs and cryptids. And I was really blown away because I only intended to do one Cowboys and Saurians book. And I just decided that was a more interesting title than Cowboys and Dinosaurs. Saurians is just an antiquated term for any type of big reptile back then, for anyone who's not familiar with it. Because a lot of people do stop and ask me, well, what's a Saurian? And I assume, you know, most people connect the dots between dinosaur and Saurian, but some people don't. So I just thought I'd mention it. Anyways, I've done four of those books now. Again, I only intended to do one, but when I started my research looking for these newspaper articles on cowboys who encountered just giant reptiles, there were so many, I realized if I were to try and include them all in one book, I'd be working on it forever. So the first round, I just decided to kind of just pick the best of them, and then I set some others aside for later. And I kind of categorize them like I have another Cowboys and Saurians book that deals mostly with Ice Age type megafauna like mammoths and saber-toothed tigers. I did a variation of Cowboys and Saurians just down in South America, but there are more cowboy versus dinosaur newspaper stories than there are cowboy alien airship stories. And then the other good side effect, though, of doing the Cowboys and Saurians book is it got Noe Torres and I to reconnect after almost 10 years and finally resume doing the Cowboys and Aliens books. So again, just with the modern newspaper archive that's online now, you know, I have it so easy compared to someone like Jerome Clark. And I want to bring up Jerome Clark because I really respect him, because I know that he dug up a lot of the really weird old newspaper stories from the 1800s. And I know when he did it, he had to do it, you know, via microfiche probably, or actual newspapers. Whereas Ellie and I just search our keyword and we get 100 results at once and we just go wild with it. It's very easy to write those books, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, let's talk about the creatures being seen. Do we feel that at one time, maybe not so much recently, there were legacy dinosaurs of some sort, creatures that were, for all practical purposes, dinosaurs still hanging around?
Absolutely. And here's the easiest answer I can give to that. 10 or 20 years ago, if you said you unequivocally, 100% you believed in aliens and UFOs, people would think you were a little kooky, you're a little strange, you'd be on the fringe. But today, we've got the government actually releasing footage of UFOs. The media basically admits that they're real. And now it's not weird to believe in UFOs anymore just because the government says it's okay to. Well, why would all the people who claim they saw the Loch Ness Monster, who claim they saw Bigfoot, why is that any different? I don't think that it is. I just don't think mystery animals are as big of a deal as UFOs for the government to become involved and do any type of disclosure on that. But, you know, people have claimed to have seen dinosaurs since ancient times. You know, I mean, you'll find Aboriginal paintings of dinosaurs in Australia. You will find cave paintings of dinosaurs here in North America. There's one along the Grand Canyon area. You know, and again, people just, it's not all the time, but people do occasionally claim to see a dinosaur-type creature, and typically it's either going to be the flying variety, like a pterodactyl, or it'll be a water-dwelling prehistoric reptile known as the plesiosaurus, because there are a lot of lake monsters out there. So that's typically what you'll see, and then pretty rarely you might see a theropod or bipedal dinosaur that walks on two legs. And you had mentioned the Skinwalker Ranch earlier. And even though the Skinwalker Ranch is, you know, known for skinwalkers, they have had a raptor sighting, as in the raptor from Jurassic Park. They've had a raptor sighting at the Skinwalker Ranch. So very rarely, you know, those types of dinosaurs will pop up as well.
Well, and as John probably knows from all of his research, there are still people today saying that they have seen dinosaur-like creatures, especially, you know, out west, Four Corners areas, places like that.
Yeah, and so when Tim brings that up, you know, or Tim, are you talking about the, what's, you said Four Corners, are you talking about the Colorado River dinosaurs?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you mentioned that, because believe it or not, I guess I should explain what they are first to listeners. They're just little tiny theropod dinosaurs. There's a really long name for one of them that starts with a C that I'm not intelligent enough to pronounce, but they're the little dinosaurs that eat a guy in Jurassic Park, The Lost World. There's just all these little dinosaurs that gang up on them and eat them. I think they're supposed to be like that. Allegedly, little dinosaurs like that are sighted, like Tim said, along the Four Corners area. But I also met a man right here in Roswell, New Mexico, who claimed that he saw one along our local Barrendo River, and I interviewed him about it. And I have to say, you know, his details with his sighting added up to other people in other regions, because they always claim these little dinosaurs are seen along riverbeds, and that's why they're called the Colorado River dinosaurs. So even Roswell has had a dinosaur sighting.
How big are these things?
Just like 3 feet, I think. So they stand like 3 feet tall or something like that. I don't remember how long they are when they run with their neck and the tail tipped to stern and all that, but I think just in terms of height, about 3 feet.
Tim?
Well, I was just going to ask real quick, you know, what were some of the details about this guy's sighting? It happened during the daytime? You know, what happened?
It was during the daytime. I remember that much. And this will go back to our earlier conversation, Tim, where, and I'm regurgitating this for the audience, not for you, but yeah. So, you know, I've written 30 books and, gosh, I mean, each chapter is its own thing where you've got a different location, different witness names, different year it took place, different type of creature. So, I didn't really read up on the Roswell mini dinosaur before this, so it's not fresh in my mind, but it's in a book I wrote called Roswell USA.
No problem. I know exactly where you're coming from on that. I mean, the dates and names and details tend to all blur together. You brought up the tombstone pterodactyl, and I think that is probably one of the most famous cases with a lot of controversy that's extended up into the 21st century concerning the alleged photograph taken. You want to fill our audience in on that in case they don't know about it?
Oh, yeah. That is absolutely, like I said, the best one. The year was 1890. So it was, you know, about 9 years after the big shootout at the OK Corral in Tombstone, which is what it was known for. But it was outside of Tombstone, I think, in the Huachuca Mountains. I think that's how it's pronounced. Just two ranchers, their names were not given, allegedly came upon this big pterodactyl-like creature that, you know, I think at the time they described as being like an alligator with wings is kind of what they said. And according to the story, they shot it, they killed it. And they dragged the body back to town, and that's what the article that appeared in the Tombstone epitaph literally said.
We're going to have more about the dinosaurs, the real-life dinosaurs being seen. John LeMay is here with Tim Swartz. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Turtle.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do yourself a favor. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA.